Hello, I'm Doug, and welcome to the Crew of Japan podcast, a weekly podcast where we take you on audio journeys through Japanese culture. Welcome back to season 3 of our podcast. We are kicking off this season with a musical flair, something we hadn't really had a chance to touch on much in the first couple of seasons. In this episode, we'll be learning more about the genre of enka. Enka music is a style of Japanese music that emerged out of the post-World War II era. And what better way is there than to discuss enka than talking to an actual enka artist himself? Today, we are fortunate enough to be joined by Jerome White Jr., also known as Jero to enka enthusiasts out there. Jero is the first African-American enka artist in Japan who soared to the top of the Oricon charts back in 2008. During our conversation with Jerome, which by the way turns out to be his first podcast appearance ever, he shined some light on how his grandmother played a pivotal role in introducing him to enka.
I would go to my grandmother's house maybe every weekend just to hang out with her because I loved her to pieces. And she would always have enka music playing.
What led to his big break?
I was living in Wakayama at the time, and I didn't have any friends in Wakayama. So I walked into this small bar and just started talking to this lady who was at the bar. And she happened to be working at NHK.
And how infusing his own style helped attract new audiences to listen to enka.
You know, my hip hop style and hip hop dance, like I feel like everybody's going to like just take this to a different level, you know. But that actually got a lot of younger fans and a lot of young people of Japan looking at enka a little bit differently.
And so much more. So if you're an inspiring musician, enka enthusiast, or just someone looking for a new genre of music to check out, then this episode is totally for you. We hope that this awesome conversation with Jerome inspires you to check out some of enka on YouTube, especially some of Jerome's hits. So let's jump on into the interview. All right, and we are back with the podcast. Today, we have a very special guest, Jerome White Jr., also known as Jero, for all you enka fans out there. And we also have Jen. Hey, Jen.
Hey, Doug.
Jerome, welcome to the Crew of Japan podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and we are very blessed to have you on today and thankful you're joining us to talk about enka. But before we do that, one thing we do with a lot of our guests, not a lot, all of our guests, we like to ask them a question to share their connection with New Orleans. What is your connection? Have you been before? If so, what is your fondest or funniest memory? And if you haven't, what do you think of when someone says New Orleans?
Well, the first thing I think of, I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing, but the first thing I think of is like Mardi Gras and the beads and how people get the beads. That's probably the first thing that I think about. But I also think about like the cuisine. You know, I'm a big fan of seafood. I love gumbo. Gumbo is really, really good. My stepdad, who's actually who actually lives here in Japan, he's actually a chef. He makes really, really good gumbo, and he's the one that actually introduced me to po' boy.
Oh yeah,
yeah. So he made it for me once, and I was like, "Oh my god, this is so good!" So, yeah, definitely. New Orleans is on my bucket list. I definitely want to go there. Definitely want to experience it, and yeah, I'll definitely get there one of these days for sure.
Cool.
Sounds like you'll fit right in then.
Oh, good.
And you know, you're based out of Tokyo, right?
Yes.
In that area,
yes.
I want to say there's a Cajun or Creole restaurant. Another interview we had for the season, we spoke to a New Orleans restaurant owner in Osaka, and he mentioned that there's a couple, or at least one kind of New Orleans-ish like food based restaurants in Tokyo. So if you're interested.
Oh, absolutely.
I know there are options out there.
The Soul Food House. I haven't been there yet, but definitely would love to go to get some of that good New Orleans food.
Yeah, I think that was the one. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Oh, was it Soul Food House?
I think so.
Okay.
Think so.
Yeah. Definitely know about that. I still haven't been. They've been here for a minute, but I haven't been yet. I need to go.
It's on your radar.
It is on my radar. Exactly. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, then let's jump into the meat of today's conversation. Some of our listeners may be aware, but for those of our listeners who aren't, how would you best describe the genre of Enka music in general? What are some key attributes or elements of Enka, and what makes Enka itself a unique form of traditional music in Japan?
Well, when people ask me what Enka is, I always tell them that it's a form of Japanese blues. The reason I say it's the blues is because it's just like the blues in the U.S. It's very melodramatic and very sad, and it deals with a lot of heartbreak and loneliness and, you know, unreciprocated love. And Enka is just that, you know, it deals with all of those things, but it also adds its own touch as far as, you know, elements from Japan, Japanese instruments. It uses a lot of imagery in Japan, a lot of the scenery. It actually names certain places of Japan. It talks about different parts of its history. And so it gathers all of those things and makes it this very deep and melodramatic genre. And I think what makes Enka really unique is that, you know, it uses a lot of symbolism. It uses all of those different parts to create a feeling in the listener to, you know, actually feel what the main character of the song is feeling. And then it kind of takes it a step further with the actual person singing the song, where they have to kind of emote a lot of those deep feelings. So it's a really powerful genre. And I think that the listener has to use a lot of imagination when they listen to it. So if they understand the lyrics and they listen to the symbolism, they can kind of get an image in their head about what the main character of the song is seeing, and kind of feel what they're feeling. And, you know, just like any song, you can kind of relate to it, and, you know, in your own life. So you mix all of that in with the actual Enka singer, you know, belting out this ballad. And I think it's a really, really powerful genre. And a lot of the younger generation of Japan really don't listen to Enka because it might be a little bit too deep for them. And also Enka actually started post-war. So that's why a lot of the older generation, I would say, you know, maybe 50 and up, are Enka fans. So, you know, while I was still singing, that was basically my main audience, was a 50 and up, usually older women, but I also had a lot of male fans as well. But those are the main, those are the core fans of Enka. Yeah.
And I've had experience with like choir singing in high school. So I'm kind of curious on the point of like the aspect of like vocal training. Did you have to go through any vocal training to like get, because Enka to me is just so specific in the way you're singing that I feel like there has to be some kind of like training to get your voice to do I don't know, just to do that kind of singing.
Yeah, I actually didn't have vocal training until I got offered a deal to perform. Wow. Professionally. Yeah. You know, it was all for me just, you know, watching and learning and mimicking what they were doing, because that was my only outlet, you know, just listening to all of the records that my grandmother had. All of the videos that were sent to her of all of these Enka artists singing. And I did my best to make myself sound just like they did. So when I actually learned how to project my voice and to take care of my voice and not actually belt out a song, you know, and one of the major things that I learned how to do was to emote, to basically feel and understand the lyrics of the song and basically project to the listener and make them feel all of the lyrics, make them you know, not just hear it in their ears but feel it in their hearts. And that's something, you know, that takes a little bit of experience to do. So that was probably the only time that I had actual formal training. Vocal training was after that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I was just curious because it's so specific of a singing genre that was like, I know my voice wouldn't be able to do that.
After many tries in karaoke, my voice can't also cannot do that. Despite my good efforts.
Yeah, it's a hard genre to sing. I mean, it's fun to sing, you know. It's always one of those songs, one of those genres that you pull out at a karaoke party every once in a while, and everybody's like, oh, you're singing an Enka song, you know. Everybody's pretty surprised about it, but they are a lot of fun to sing.
Well, speaking of fun Enka songs, you know, a lot of people, when dipping into like a new music genre, they always kind of want to have recommendations of like where to start listening, or like, you know, what songs to listen to. So, you know, who are some of your favorite Enka singers or songs that you would recommend to first time listeners of the genre?
Well, I would definitely recommend. So, you know, like in the States, we have, you know, Aretha Franklin is like the queen of soul. There's an artist in Japan known as Misora Hibari, who is the queen of Enka. There is no disputing that. Anyone who knows Enka, or anyone who listens to Enka, would definitely know Misora Hibari. She was actually one of the very first singers that I learned about when I was a kid. And it was one of the very first songs that I had learned was of hers. And she is just, I mean, she just can do anything with her voice. And I would definitely start there and listen to a lot of her songs. She's one of my favorites. Another favorite of mine is another artist known as Sakamoto Fuyumi. She is somebody that I idolized as a kid, just because every time she was on stage and every time she was on TV, she just seemed very personable. All of her songs would just kind of like stay in my head. You know, her voice is amazing as well. Itsuki Hiroshi is one of my favorite male vocalists. Sakamoto Fuyumi and Itsuki Hiroshi, they're both actually still singing to this day. I think Itsuki Hiroshi has over, you know, 50 years under his belt. Sakamoto Fuyumi's been in the game for about 35 years. Unfortunately, Misora Hibari died a while back. But she's still like the OG, you know, she's still number one. So I would definitely start with those three artists. And then, you know, YouTube is your friend, you know, it's easy to fall into a nice little YouTube rabbit hole and start listening to a bunch of other singers and videos and things. And it's easy to get hooked on it. I mean, I definitely did.
Who, not to put you on the spot, do you know who sings Yosaku?
Yosaku is Kitajima Saburo.
Okay.
Yes.
Because that was the one song I would actually try, and I knew that one all right. I don't know. I haven't heard it in a while, but yeah, when I would do my attempts, that was one of the ones.
Yeah, I actually covered that song.
I pulled out a Nomikais and Nijikais and all that fun stuff with workers.
Yeah. I actually covered that song on one of my cover albums.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Yeah, I did an all a cappella version of it.
Oh, cool.
It's pretty cool. Yeah, I'm kind of actually proud of that. Yeah, exactly.
But it sounds like from your recommendations, you know, the genre is kind of still alive. You know, people are still recording, you know, Enka songs. So that's good to hear.
Yeah, it is. You know, I think there's a lot of new artists coming out currently as well. But unfortunately, it's not as popular as it was back in the day, which makes me really, really sad. A lot of TV shows, a lot of music shows on TV, they like to compartmentalize and they like to, you know, separate Enka from pop music. And, you know, it's all about the viewers. It's all about the, you know, money makes the world go round, right? So, you know, right, if they can get all of, you know, more viewers, you know, putting on this pop band on TV, then that's what they're probably going to do. As most people probably, you know, the younger generation probably doesn't want to watch an Enka star on TV singing a song dated back from before they were born, you know. So it really makes me sad. And it's kind of getting worse and worse. And a lot of Enka artists are losing outlets to sing a lot of different TV shows, you know, just specifically don't cater to Inca audiences. So yeah, it's really unfortunate, but I mean, they're still holding strong for sure.
Well, that's good. I mean, I think that's, there's always going to be that, you know, that target audience is always going to be there. I feel like it's, right. It's kind of entrenched itself in terms of like just in the music industry as maybe a more targeted genre than pop music. You know, pop music is just, you know, general, like, hey, here's a, you know, like spitting out like little groups here and there, left and right, you know? Yeah. But like, I feel like Enka really does have like a stronghold on a very good demographic of listeners, and it will, that will hold strong, you know, even as time passes by.
I hope so. You know, just to see, like, basically you can count on one hand how many TV shows have Enka singers on them. Before, I think when I was a kid, I would see just a music, a TV show with music and artists on it would just span a bunch of genres, right? So,
yeah.
And I think that's what make it, that's what made it so interesting. But since it's so compartmentalized and they just really are catering to just one specific audience, it kind of hurts the genre, right?
Yeah. Because
pop music definitely has. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, they lose a lot of exposure. So a lot of people don't know that this person has a new song coming out, or they don't know this song is a really good song. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, but like I said, they're doing their best. I think so.
Sure. Well, you had mentioned when you were a kid and watching the show that had Enka in it and whatnot. That brings us kind of to our next question was, it's pretty well documented that your grandmother had a very huge influence on your life growing up, especially when it comes to Enka. You had mentioned she kind of introduced you to it. Can you help describe how she helped create this connection between you and Enka?
Well, my grandmother was born in Japan, and she moved to the States after the war with my grandfather, who's originally from Pittsburgh. I was born and raised in Pittsburgh. And I would go to my grandmother's house maybe every weekend just to hang out with her because I loved her to pieces. And she would always have Enka music playing, you know, be it on a, you know, on a videotape or a cassette tape, a record, and, you know, just always listening to it. I just automatically started remembering these songs, not knowing what they meant. And, you know, when I would sing along with her or sing in front of her, she would just light up, and it would just make her so happy to see me sing this song, you know, from her homeland that she just, you know, kept so dear to her heart. So that just kind of, you know, reeled me in because, you know, just seeing her smile and seeing her just so happy with me singing these songs, it kind of like, you know, tugged at my heartstrings, and it just started from there, basically.
That's great.
I told her that, you know, I was probably like 5 or 6, you know, when I get older, I'm going to be a singer. I'm going to be an Enka singer. I'm going to be very, really famous. And, you know, and she was like, okay, good luck, you know. So, but it actually happened. So
I have a 5 and 6 year old, a 5 year old, almost going to be 6 in a couple months. And he says things like that too, like, and like, try, you know, like just things like, I'm going to do this. I'm like, you can do it.
Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah.
It's great. I mean, that's incredible that, you know, you kind of like this passion that you developed over time with your grandma and that connection became something out of it, you know.
Yeah,
it's great.
Absolutely.
So that is actually my next question for you is, like, okay, so you had this idea when you were younger, when you were first introduced, like, okay, I want to do this thing, I want to be an Enka singer, and obviously, you know, Enka is a Japanese genre of music, so you had to obviously move to Japan to kind of really do anything big with it. You pretty much went to Japan with the goal of being an Enka musician, it seems like to me, from what you just described. And, you know, how did that go about? Like, just like you moved to Japan, like, okay, let me start maybe like booking gigs for yourself. Like, what was the wheels turning for you like?
Well, I had never thought in a million years that I would become an Enka singer, but what kind of got the ball rolling on that was I was 15 and I was in high school, and it was my first experience to come to Japan I was a part of a Japanese speech contest. I had won a local speech contest, and I was chosen as the U.S. representative for the worldwide speech, the global speech contest. And nice. That was when I was 15. So that was my first time in Japan, and we spent 2 weeks in Tokyo, and that just kind of solidified it for me. I was like, I'm coming back here. This place is amazing. You know, I bought all of these Enka CDs while I was here. You know, I told everybody that I liked this genre. Everybody was like, why do you listen to Enka? You're only 15, you know, it's just like, what is wrong with you? But yeah, just those 2 weeks, I immersed myself in this, you know, in the culture, and just, you know, tried to improve my Japanese as much as possible. I had another opportunity to come to Japan at 19 as an exchange student, and that was for about 3 months. I spent time in Osaka, and that was when I kind of got my footing and was just like, okay, I think I can actually do this. I think there is an opportunity here for me to come back and live in Japan. And, you know, I was going to university at the time. So I told myself, if I don't end up becoming an anchor singer, I can at least do what I studied, which was IT. I felt like there could be a career here, either or. But I knew I wanted to be in Japan. So right after I graduated, 4 months later, this was in 2003, I moved to Japan. And I really just wanted to try. I told myself that if I didn't try, you know, I would kind of regret it later on. So one thing my mom did tell me, because I did tell her that I wanted to try and become an Enka singer. And she said, wherever you go, if somebody tells you to sing, you sing. And I was like, okay, I'll definitely do that. So I kept those words in mind. So I'm just thinking, like, you know, exposure, you know, I have to get exposed somehow to become an Enka singer. So I was living in Wakayama at the time, and I didn't have any friends in Wakayama. So I walked into this small bar and just started talking to this lady who was at the bar, and she happened to be working at NHK at the time. Yeah, she was working at NHK at the time. And, you know, it was my first time meeting her, obviously. And she was like, well, what are you here for? And I said, well, I'm currently teaching English, but, you know, I want to be an Enka singer. Of course, she kind of freaked out, like, okay. But she told me in a few months that they were having auditions for a TV show called Nodojiman. I don't know if you guys know of Nodojiman. It's kind of like the Gong Show. They have it on NHK every Sunday. It comes on every Sunday at 12 o'clock, and basically there's about 20 people who are on the show. It's live, and you sing a song, and if you sing well, you get a fanfare of bells. If you sing okay, you just get 2 bells. If you sound horrible, you just get 1 bell. And the 1 bell is kind of like the most embarrassing thing you can have. You're like belting out this song and it's just like ding. And then you just have to stop singing because nobody liked it. But, you know, I was like, I would love to audition. I've been watching this show since I was a kid. And, you know, we became really good friends. I'm still friends with her to this day. And she showed me how to, you know, fill out the form and how to apply to be on this show, because it's all by chance. They basically get all of these applications and they just pick out 250 applications, and mine just happened to get picked. And then from the 250 people, everyone auditions on the same day, and they pick 20 people out of the 250 people to go on the live show. And I was one of those people. So my very first time singing in front of a crowd, singing Enka in front of a crowd, was on live TV.
No pressure, right?
But I sang. I was really nervous. I sang. I got the fanfare bells, and that just kind of got the ball rolling. I was like, I have to do this.
That's incredible.
I have to do, you know, start doing something to actually get this, you know, get my career going. So I kept going to karaoke contests. You know, I was winning karaoke contests left and right, and I was just hoping that there would be somebody there. You know, I would be there at the right place at the right time. Some record exec hopefully would look at me, see the potential, and sign me. And that's exactly what happened. So,
yeah, sounds like it all paid off.
It really did.
I mean, it just happened. You walked into a bar and was it Wakayama, right?
Yes.
And and it's like almost like serendipitous, right?
It really is.
It's meant to if it's meant to be, it's meant to be.
Yeah, it's crazy how life works, but
And I mean, like you mentioned, I mean, you're a foreigner singing Enka, and when, like you said, when you're talking earlier about being a 15-year-old, you're like, why the hell are you why the hell do you like Enka? You know, you kind of stand out from that. And I mean, you'll be known in the industry as a pioneer because you were like the first Black Enka singer in the Japanese music industry.
Yeah.
I mean, and as a foreigner as a whole, like, were there any particular challenges you ran into that were like, I don't want to say gatekeeping, but barriers that you may have run into that that made things a little bit more challenging and difficult? Was like you said, the form, you needed help filling out the form for NHK to get the paperwork in there. You know, I'm sure signing with agencies and stuff involves a lot of legalese that, you know, you need to rely on lawyers and stuff. Like, what were some of the things that you ran into that maybe were challenging because you were a foreigner? You maybe, you know, weren't used to living in Japan and dealing with certain things.
I think the most thing for me was possibly not being taken seriously. You know, I kind of just let my voice speak for itself, and let my story speak for itself, because, you know, this whole Enka thing just basically started with my grandmother. So, you know, I basically made sure that people knew where this love for this genre of music came from, and, you know, basically just let the story and let the voice speak for itself. And I think actually me being a foreigner kind of worked in my favor, right? Because it's something that's never happened before. Someone that looks like me singing something so Japanese, you know, that Japanese people wouldn't even think would ever happen in a lifetime, you know? So, I think it actually worked in my favor just being a foreigner and my story as well. So I'm thankful for that. I embraced that wholeheartedly from the beginning.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear that you kind of put something that some people could see as like a negative thing, like, oh my gosh, I'm a foreigner, I'm not going to be able to get into this industry.
Yeah.
And I like how you use that to your advantage.
Absolutely.
And I think a lot of people can benefit from listening to you and this, like, using you as an example to try and, you know, get into whatever it is that they're trying to get into in Japan. Just because you're a foreigner doesn't mean you can't, you know, use what you can work with, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It may take a little more work, but
For sure. And I think the mentality of Japanese people think that, you know, everything is so hard that we're the only ones that can do it. You know, even when it comes to their language or when it comes to their specific ways of doing things, when a foreigner can come in and learn and actually embrace, you know, parts of Japanese culture and do it as well as they can, it's just like, you know, it's so just surprising to them. So, you know, it takes a lot of, you have to be, how can I say, just kind of have the mental, you know, be confident in yourself to actually, you know, say, I can actually do this, you know, but it can be rough at times, because you'll definitely hear a lot of no's before you hear your first yes. So I definitely think whatever, you know, anyone is out there trying to do as a foreigner in Japan, you know, just keep at it for sure.
And I mean, when something becomes popular in Japan too, it takes a meteoric rise, right? Like, absolutely. If one thing breaks the news, it's pretty much, like you said, NHK is the leading like channel in Japan mm-hmm. when it comes to news. So
yeah.
if you make it there, it's, you know, takes off. And I mean, a big right. part of your success and popularity was, one, being a foreigner, but you also kind of put your own twist and like your own like kind of stamp on the genre.
Mm-hmm.
In, you know, integrating like some different aspects that maybe they hadn't heard in that type of music before.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So what were some of the unique things that you brought to Enka as a community that captivated the existing Enka fans while attracting some new fans simultaneously?
I think at the time when I first started singing, I was 26, and I didn't want to come across as a joke, but, you know, because like I said, I really love this genre of music and I really wanted to sing it, but I wanted to be myself in the process as well. So I didn't want to like wear a kimono on stage or wear a suit on stage. Like I wanted to be, at the time I was, you know, always in hip hop gear, always had a fitted hat on, you know, baggy jeans and just, I wanted to be that person on stage. And, I just wanted to do that and try and get more a younger audience kind of getting interested in Enka. But my director at the time, you know, kind of took it a step further and said, why don't you incorporate hip hop dance into the music video? And I've been dancing since I was in high school. And I was dancing a little bit as well while I was in Japan. But I thought, you know, maybe that's a little bit too much, you know, like it's, you know, incorporating Enka, you know, my hip hop style and hip hop dance. Like, I feel like everybody's going to like just take this to a different level, you know, but that actually got a lot of younger fans and a lot of young people of Japan looking at Enka a little bit differently, you know?
Yeah.
And after I had came out with my first single and just seeing the crowds at, you know, several of my shows, I mean, it was just a nice balanced mix of ages, and they were really interested in what I was doing, and it blew my mind. So I was actually thankful to him for suggesting that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool, cuz like I didn't really know what Enka was until, I mean, I had heard some, but I didn't really know that what I had heard was Enka. Mm-hmm. You know, I never really associated this type of song to the genre. I never put a name to it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was 2008, right? When yes. your single came out.
Mm-hmm.
I was teaching on JET, visiting a buddy of mine, and we went to karaoke and he busted it out. So it's one of those, like, it's one of those things that I would have never really gotten more into Enka or even tried it. But like yours was, it was different mm-hmm. from what I had heard, you know, it. Again, at Nijikais and Sanjikais at like 2:30 in the morning when like my drunk colleagues are belting out like karaoke songs.
Right.
So, I mean, your song Umiyuki, I think it reached, if I'm remembering correctly, number 4 mm-hmm. on the Oricon pop charts. Mm-hmm. Not just the Enka section, but like the actual pop music charts.
Right.
Back in 2008. And, you know, did you ever imagine that like your song would rise that high in the pop charts, like not, you know, not just in the Enka charts, but just mm-hmm. in the, probably the, is that like the biggest like music chart, like thing in Japan?
Oricon? In Japan. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Oricon is just basically the music chart, kind of like the Billboard of Japan. And you know, I don't know about now, but back in the day, Oricon was just CD sales. It did not include streaming or downloads. Yeah, I never thought in a million years that I would hit that level of success, you know. And for me to hit, you know, number 4 on the Oricon charts as a new Enka artist, even now, like that record hasn't been beat yet for a new Enka artist. So I'm really like humbled by that. I'm really thankful for that as well. But I never thought in a million years that like my debut single would actually do that well, because Enka has this kind of like saying, Kusetsu nanjune, which basically means that you're going to fall for a few years, or you're not going to do a few years. You have to actually struggle for a few years before you actually hit success. It's very rare for an anchor artist to actually hit a high point in their career with their very first single. And I think I was really lucky, and I had the right team. It was something new, and it all just kind of just it meshed together really well.
That's great. And then, 2008 hit at, that's your hit drops. And then the year ends with you getting selected to perform on Kohaku Uta Gassen on NHK on New Year's Eve. And I don't know if all of our listeners know, but that's like the big musical event that goes on New Year's Eve, kind of similar to how in the US we have our like countdown shows and with the performances and, right. and artists and whatnot coming out and singing. So what was that experience like, and what did it mean to you? Selected and perform on that stage.
Oh my goodness, that meant everything to me. So Kohaku Uta Gassen was basically, a big thing between my mom, my grandmother, and as well as my grandfather. Since we couldn't watch it in real time back in the day, we would always get a video sent to us in the U.S. in Pittsburgh. So we would have to watch it, obviously, after January 1st. And I would always watch it for all of the anchor artists. I would want to see what they wear because they, they always wearing something extremely extravagant for the show. There's all of those people in the hall. There's like maybe 3,000 people in the hall. There's all of this, pomp and circumstance and these over the top, productions for each song. And it just looked like a really good time, And you can tell that a lot of artists who get to perform on Kohaku for the first time, they take it as a serious honor because my grandmother used to tell me, if you're invited to perform on Kohaku, that means you've made it. And as a kid, when I told her that I was going to be an Inca singer, I said, well, I'm going to be on Kohaku one day, So,
That's so sweet.
Yeah, I was really happy about that. And so when I went to perform, when I got the invitation to Kohaku, I just bawled. I was so happy about it. And my whole family came from the U.S. to
watch.
That's incredible.
In the audience. And, like I said, this all started with my grandmother. So I wanted to bring her along in some way. So on my actual, shirt, I had her face airbrushed on my shirt. For Kohaku.
She was right there with you.
Yeah, she was right there with me. Yeah.
That's awesome.
It was a great experience. Mm-hmm.
That's so cool. And I mean, in addition to performing on that stage, it sounds like you got to do a little bit of touring around the world in the US. When I was doing my research, I saw that you had performed in like DC and on the West Coast. And, mm-hmm. and did you perform also in Pittsburgh too? Any shows there?
Yeah, I did a show at my alma mater, University of Pittsburgh.
That's awesome. So you got to perform in front of like your hometown. That's pretty mm-hmm. cool.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. It was awesome.
So what do you think it would, just everything in Japan, but then also everything outside of Japan that you've done, like what do you feel has been your biggest impact on Enka as a whole?
I think just being this, young black kid from Pittsburgh singing a very Japanese style of music, just being the first and having a lot of firsts throughout my career. And not just having fans in Japan, but also being able to actually, it was weird, like going back to, the University of Pittsburgh where I went to school, where, I wasn't that popular to that level. But when I went home and actually performed, I mean, it was a sold out show in the actual hall that, I would actually go to shows and see.
Yeah.
And actually sit in the audience. And I was like, it was weird for me to actually be singing a Japanese song in my hometown at my alma mater in front of all of these you know, of course there was some Japanese people in the crowd, but it was mostly, you know, Americans. Yeah. And it was just a surreal moment for me. But it definitely, it was a great experience for me, you know, performing in Chicago, performing in San Francisco, LA, just having all of these sold out shows. And it's just like, wow, like people outside of Japan actually know who I am. So it was, I always keep that in my heart.
So you really did act as a bridge to like a generational bridge. Like you introduced new people to the genre. Like without you, it wouldn't have happened. Like in the US or Japan.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty incredible. I mean, I wouldn't. I literally, when I think of Enka, I think of Yosaku and you.
That's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, that's just my, like, what I associate, because I don't know as many. And I mean, I'd hear songs, but I never really kind of like take out my pen and jot down the name and try, like, you know, I'd try to remember them for karaoke for the next time, but then I'm just too drunk to remember, and you know how it goes. But it's so cool, like having that kind of impact in something at that young, you know, that age of your life, you know, like you said 26 when you got your like first hit, right?
Yeah. 26 is when I started. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah.
It's really,
yeah.
Is.
And to know that you're kind of like the first, you know, I don't know, kind of, almost like just first foreigner to do it. So like, you don't really have standards to follow. You were the standards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's awesome.
Well, technically I'm not the first foreigner, because there was another, a person from India named Chada. He was the very first.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's interesting to know.
But I am the very first African American Enka singer.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah. Just a little history, awesome. A little Enka history.
Yeah. So maybe there was a little bit. Maybe there was a little bit of standards, but you definitely made your way with your own kind of vibe going. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
You said the Indian person was Chada.
Chada, yeah.
And was it a younger person or older? Or?
This was back in, I want to say the late 1970s, early 1980s. Okay. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
wow. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I think his single was called, don't get me to lying. I know how the song goes, but I can't remember the name of the title. I'm sorry, Chada. But yeah, his name is Chada. He's from India. Yes.
Like you said, YouTube rabbit hole. Here I come.
There you
like,
go. There you go.
Well, you kind of mentioned it a little earlier in our podcast, but like you had this idea that like if you couldn't do Enka, you know, you would have your backup from your college days, which is, you know, studying IT. And, you know, you decided to transition from the music industry in recent years and to pursue a career in IT, which that's something that you and Doug actually have something in common with, because Doug also works in IT. So, you know, what kind of attracted you to do, you know, to be in the IT industry in Japan? And, you know, do you ever see yourself, you know, going back to music at any point?
Well, you know, I did sing for 10 years.
Which is a long time.
It is a very long time, yeah. It definitely had its struggles, you know, just a lot of ups and downs. And I'm more of a type of person that does a whole lot better with stability. I like having stability in my life. And when there's a lot of ups and downs, it can kind of take its toll on you mentally, you know, which is probably the main reason why I decided to kind of take a hiatus and take a break from singing. But I told myself at the beginning of my career that if I decided to leave music, that I wanted to leave without any regrets. I wanted to actually do everything that I could to keep singing. But if it got too much, if it got too stressful, you know, if it kind of got too hard, I would definitely put myself first and take care of me. And that's what I did. Yeah, that's what I did. It was a really hard decision to come to. But I'm really glad I did it because I'm in a much better place right now. But, you know, I enjoy what I do in IT, you know, and I'm actually glad that my grandmother, she's the one that actually told me, you know, I was ready to come to Japan right out of high school. You know, I was like, I'm ready to go. And she's like, no, you have to finish college. And so I'm actually thankful for that, too. You know, because if I just kind of come over here thinking that I was going to be a singer right away, you know, if you couldn't sing anymore, what was I going to do? You know, so I'm glad I actually had that backup. And if there was an opportunity for me to go back into singing, you know, and if the right opportunity presented itself, absolutely, because I do miss it. I can't lie about that. I do miss singing. I do miss the adrenaline, the rush, and the music as a whole. I still listen to the music, but just the performing aspect of it is always a good thing. But yeah, if I had the opportunity, I would definitely take it for sure.
Who knows? Maybe one of our listeners is going to be like, hey, I got the opportunity for you right here.
Man, bring it on. Bring
just
it
like
on.
That bar in Wakayama, man.
Yeah, you know exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
So I did have a question for you. I'm just curious, since we are both IT professionals, what area of IT do you look at? Are you on like more like infrastructure or programming coding? What kind of type of IT work do you do?
I hate coding. Yeah. Just put that out there.
Yeah, it
takes not a big coder. Yeah, but yeah. I'm more of like you know, system engineering, infrastructure type of guy.
Cool.
Yeah, I do like doing a lot of the back end stuff, and just kind of configuring things, making sure everything works, and you know, administrating a lot of different parts of it. Yeah, I kind of work better when I'm just like on my own and not have to deal with other people, and just, you know, I'm content with the monitors in front of me and just working on something, focusing on one thing. You would think I would like to be a coder, but that's just a little bit too much. Yeah. A little bit too much.
I would turn my computer and show you my setup because I probably have the stereotypical IT.
Oh,
IT setup there's two computers there and I'm holding a computer and there's two more monitors around it. So.
Yeah, my webcam, the wire is a little bit short, but I literally have three monitors in front of me. Yeah. So, yeah. And the gaming chair. So
I don't know how I just lived with just one laptop screen for like the early 20s of my life.
Right.
I didn't have a second monitor until I started doing this. I'm like, what was I doing?
Yeah, exactly. It makes a total difference. I get it.
Well, back to kind of the music topic, you know, we may have listeners who may be interested in breaking into the Japanese music scene, any genre, really. Would you have any advice for someone who is trying to look into doing that but maybe discouraged?
Oh, definitely do it. I think we need more foreigners on TV in Japan, period. You know, I think it's always a good thing just to show that there are a lot of different cultures and a lot of different, you know, breeds out there, just a lot of different mixes of people and different types of people in the world. And I think Japan is doing a decent job doing it. I think they can do a whole lot better. But yeah, for sure. I mean, just like I said, for me, it was just just exposure, you know, just go for it. If there's a place that you can actually sing, if there's a place that you can actually, you know, for me, it was the karaoke contests, you know, like, because there's not a lot of places you can't just go to a piano bar and start singing Enka in front of everybody because, you know, everybody would look at you crazy. But I mean, you know, you just have to find that outlet where you can get the exposure, I think, for sure. And, you know, just keep, you know, sending out the videos. You know, I feel like it's a lot easier right now with social media. You know, back in 2008, and especially when I moved to Japan in 2003, we didn't have those kinds of outlets, you know? So, I mean, if you can use social media to your advantage, I think there's so many people out there that's just doing it right. You know?
Yeah.
I'm kind of envious a little bit, but
I had to think moment. Back to those times before.
Yeah.
pre-2010s, I guess, 2010-ish.
Yeah, before, I mean Facebook and the stuff internet was around, but definitely not what it was now.
No, not at all. Not at all. It has definitely evolved.
For better or for worse.
Yeah, there's a lot of good things, a lot of bad things. Yeah. You know, it comes with the territory.
But, I mean, that kind of brings us close to the end of our, I say close, to the end of our interview with you about Enka. But usually we have a few fun questions that we like to ask some of our guests.
Okay.
We do sometimes a lightning round or, bonus like rapid fire question challenge or things like that. But we're going to keep it a little simpler today.
Okay.
Just a couple questions. But and you don't know any of this, right? Before, we're clarifying that for the audience that's listening.
I do not. Nope.
These questions are not provided in advance. what is your go-to karaoke song when you go to karaoke? English or Japanese, or maybe both. Why not both?
My go-to karaoke song. So if I'm in the States, my go-to karaoke song is What You Won't Do for Love. I love that song.
All right.
Yeah, that's my go-to. If I'm in Japan, it depends on the audience, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, right? Karaoke is all about the audience.
It's all about the audience, because even as a professional Enka singer, okay, if I'm around my friends of course they know of my career and everything, but the songs I really want to sing are songs that they've never heard in their lives. And I don't want to be the one who's like, oh, okay, here he goes with his Enka song. I don't want to bring the mood.
The Jado tracks on karaoke, like, oh, here we go again.
I don't want to be that guy. You know, I'm not going to throw that in their face. But I definitely try to feel the mood a little bit and try to associate and pick out the little bit of pop songs that I do know.
There you go. You throw some SMAP in there. I feel like SMAP.
Yeah, yeah. Y'all, SMAP is always, there you go. There you go.
All right. Next question. I know in a lot of pictures of you online, you're wearing Steelers gear.
Okay.
So I actually got a terrible towel in my closet over here somewhere.
Beautiful. I have one. Beautiful. Too.
Do you?
Yeah, I love the Steelers.
Oh,
you like that's football?
Awesome. Yeah.
Love the Steelers. Ever since high school, love the Steelers.
Yes.
Oh my God.
I'm in good company. I'm in great company. Awesome.
You were in Japan when they won the Super Bowl, right?
Yes.
Yeah, probably.
Was it the Cardinals?
Mm-hmm.
I think it was the Cardinals. Mm-hmm. I had a friend of mine on Jet. She lived in the apartment building next door. And she was from Pittsburgh, and she was a big Steelers fan. So we had like a Super Bowl party at my place and watched them win. She gave everybody terrible towels. That's where mine came from.
There you go.
Jesse, if you're out there listening.
Yeah. Yeah.
But who is your favorite Steelers player all time?
Oh, my God. So this is, oh, my God. I'm so glad you asked this question. So I celebrated my 30th birthday in 2011. And I threw this huge party in Pittsburgh, and I invited all of my friends and all of my family. And I turned it into a white party. I made everyone wear white, and I had a DJ. I had I had it catered. It was a great party, a really great party. And my siblings and my mom, they bought me a signed autographed jersey from Heinz Ward.
All right.
And I still have it. I still have it because I loved Heinz Ward.
I was pretty sure that's who the jersey you're wearing in a few of the pictures that
yes.
looking around. There's always a Heinz Ward
that's
jersey.
Yeah. Awesome.
I mean, that it wasn't the signed one, obviously.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, we don't wear that.
Yeah, we don't wear that one. But yeah, I got that for my 30th birthday, and it says happy 30th birthday, Jerome, and it has his signature.
That's awesome.
Oh, that's God. Fantastic.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It was a really good birthday for sure.
It sounds like it, man. Mm-hmm. So since part of your stamp and imprint on Enka was a little bit of a like hip hop feel, who's your favorite hip hop artist?
Oh, my favorite hip hop artist. Oh man, I'm really old school. That's a hard question.
Doing the hard hitting ones at the very end.
I'd probably have to say Tupac.
Okay.
I still listen to Tupac's albums. Tupac and Biggie for sure. Yeah. Those are probably my favorites. But I wear the hip hop gear, but I'm an old school R&B soul.
There you go.
My favorite artist of all time is Luther Vandross.
There you go.
Yeah. So for sure.
So that's got to be one of your next karaoke songs next time, right, Luther?
Luther's a hard one to sing. You know, you don't want to don't want to touch Luther if you can't do it. I hold my own, but you know, like some people are really sensitive about who sings Luther. So you're singing in front of friends, it's okay, but when you're singing in front of an audience, it's just like get that guy off the stage. You know, like
one bell.
Yeah,
one
exactly, bell. One bell.
All right, last question. What is your favorite convenience store? And at that convenience store, what is your go-to item?
Oh, that's easy. That's easy.
Okay.
7-Eleven string cheese. That's easy.
Wow.
Okay, so I mean basically you can get the string cheese anywhere, but I think 7-Eleven has some of the best prepared foods, like the best onigiri, you know, the best foods that you can get microwave really quickly, the best meals. It just, everything just tastes really good. But my thing is that when I go to a convenience store, I always buy string cheese. It's my favorite thing in the world. I don't ask me why. I actually bought some before this interview. I went to the store and bought some string cheese and, you know, just went to town. But yeah, 7-Eleven is really, really good in Japan. The only thing that would make it better is if they had Slurpees. If they had,
that's the one thing about like Japanese convenience stores, the they don't have this like drink dispensers and stuff, like, yeah, you know, like the things you could just kind of fill up your cup.
No,
and,
but they have like awesome coffee machines.
Yeah, everybody loves the coffee. Yeah,
yeah, but I feel like the coffee, they leave you like half the cup empty. Like, I'm like, can I get a top off over here?
Right. Yeah, it's not like, you know, to the brim where it's about.
Yeah, just a little bit, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
All right. Yeah. And actually, it's funny you said 7-Eleven, because my son, he's graduating kindergarten next week. Mm-hmm. And like he had to do his like summer bucket list. And we're going back to Japan in July.
Oh, great. And,
yeah. Yeah. We're visiting my wife's family in Ibaraki. So I'll be in Tokyo for a little bit and then going up to Ibaraki.
Nice.
And on his bucket list, places he wants to go are Baba and Coco's house.
Mm-hmm.
And then I forget where the other one was, but then the last one was 7-Eleven.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. I don't know. It's just a different vibe.
You know, I don't know.
In the US, you know, it's just,
it is
just all of the quality is just so much better. You know,
I feel like convenience stores are way more in your face in Japan than they are here. Like you got your gas stations and that's pretty much attached to a convenience store. Right.
But
in Japan, you're just walking by, there's a convenience store here, there, everywhere. So,
yeah.
It's always fun. Community store is a great icebreaker when you want to talk to someone.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Everyone has a favorite.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Mm-hmm. It's like convenience store wars over there.
Right.
All right. Well, I mean, that's pretty much all we got for you, man. Thank you so much. It was a lot of fun
talking to you.
Yeah, same here. Thank you for reaching out and asking me to do this. This is actually my very first podcast that I've done ever in life.
Wow.
So I can cross my bucket list. Yeah.
Crew of Japan. Here we go. Jado first. before we totally wrap up, do you have anything maybe that you have upcoming, or maybe a YouTube channel, Twitch streaming channel, website, social media you want to just let people out there they're looking for you, want to look for some of your content?
Yeah. So I don't I'm not performing at all right now, but I do try to keep my Twitter page up to date. So if you want to follow me on Twitter, my handle is Jeroenka, Jeroenka. And I also recently, just about a few weeks ago, I joined Cameo.
Oh,
Yeah, I joined Cameo, and they recently released here in Japan. So if you search for me on Cameo, you can search for my real name, Jerome White, or Jetto. It should pop up. And if you want me to give that special someone a birthday message, a congratulations, you know, a bar mitzvah, whatever you want me to do, you know, I can do that as well. So yeah, Cameo and Twitch are good ways to get in contact with me.
I'm going to do a Cameo requesting some Luther Vandross.
Oh my God. I'll have to apply.
Well, again, thank you so much, man. It was a lot of fun. We don't want to keep you anymore. I know it's early in the morning over there.
Saturday. You know, I'm off. Sure. So
there you go. Good. There you go. Well, go do something fun. I know it's got a whole day ahead of you.
Yeah, we'll do. We'll do. Thank you so
Get
much.
Some more string cheese.
Yeah, yeah. I think I'll do that. always a good time with string cheese.
Oh yeah. All right. Well, thanks again. And we're going to go YouTube some of these songs and artists you told us about.
Yes, definitely do that. Thank you so much.
And just like that, this week's episode comes to an end. Thank you so much for tuning into our podcast. In today's episode, we learned a lot about the world of Enka, not just about the genre itself, but what it's like to be an Enka singer too. A special thank you to Jerome White Jr., aka Jetto, for joining us for a great conversation. It was so good to hear his story and how he made his mark on the Enka community, not only in Japan, but around the world. We hope some of Jerome's story and experiences inspire you to check out some of those Enka recommendations on YouTube, especially some of those Jetto hits. Heck, next time you find yourself at karaoke, maybe give an Enka song a try. Can't be much worse than me. Got a recommendation for Enka? Or maybe you have an idea for a future episode. Share with us on social media, on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, at Crew Japan Podcast. Instagram is at KREWEOFJAPANPODCAST. Yeah, I'm going to spell it out for you because it's been a long time since we had an episode come out. Facebook, Crew of Japan Podcast, and on Twitter, at Crew of Japan, KREWEOFJAPAN. While you're there, give us a like, follow, retweet, share, whatever floats your boat. We appreciate it. Let us know how you're enjoying the podcast. Or perhaps, maybe you prefer to provide feedback in a more private setting. Send us an email at KREWEOFJAPANPODCAST@gmail.com. That's crewofjapanpodcast@gmail.com. Speaking of feedback, if you are enjoying what you're listening to right now, please feel free to leave us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast streaming app. Trying to level up that rating game, y'all. Come on. But seriously, any and all support is greatly appreciated. Season 3 is just beginning, and we're about to take off. And unfortunately, this episode is coming to an end. But stay tuned, for every Friday afternoon, we're going to be dropping new episodes coming out to your streaming apps. Oh yeah, and one more thing. Are you interested in joining Japan Society New Orleans? Or maybe you already are a member. Heck yeah, you are. If you are in the greater New Orleans metropolitan area, on June 29th, join Japan Society New Orleans and Japan Club of New Orleans for a meetup at Wetland Sake Brewery at 5:30 p.m. Who knows? Maybe you'll catch yours truly there. But that's it for today. Until next time.